Support for this public radio podcast comes from Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. And by A.G. Edwards, caring for nest eggs for more than 120 years with a commitment to provide objective financial advice. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
All right, so riddle me this. Is it the big deals on Wall Street that are driving investors, or is it some irrational exuberance that's making companies do all these big deals? Today's installment of Companies with Too Much Cash on Hand was brought to you by Alcoa, offering $27 billion for its biggest competitor. One hesitates to wonder out loud, but can everything possibly be that good? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by The Economist magazine, which tells not only what's happening around the world each week, but why. The Economist, at newsstands, in bookstores, and at economist.com. And by Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Monday today, May 7th. Good to have you here. Investors spent the day savoring the possibility of yet another big merger. That hostile Alcoa bid for its Canadian rival Alcan had tongues wagging on Wall Street. It was no small factor in sending the Dow Industrials to yet another record high and its 24th positive close in the past 27 days that Wall Street's been working. Historical comparisons can be tricky, of course. Past performance is no guarantee of future success. But the Dow's on a winning streak we haven't seen since Charles Lindbergh made a name for himself back in 1927. We asked Marketplace's Amy Scott whether this market has enough lift to keep it in the sky.
Deal mania is one factor pumping up the market. Recent takeover bids for ABN AMRO, Cablevision, Dow Jones, and now Alcan have investors betting on the next takeover target. Better than expected corporate earnings haven't hurt either. Most S&P 500 companies have reported first quarter profits, and they're up more than 9% on average. Forecasters had predicted more like 3.5%. But some market strategists worry about the troubled housing sector. More subprime borrowers are defaulting on their mortgages. Market analyst Charles Rotblat with research firm Zacks.com says stock investors are ignoring the downside.
Slow economic growth, gas prices at over $3 at the pump. And there's just this underlying bull sentiment that's continuing to drive the market.
Some market watchers are thinking bubble, but strategist Al Goldman with A.G. Edwards predicts a short-term correction rather than a pop. He says the Dow has risen 11% in less than 2 months. It can't keep up that kind of pace forever.
So if someone is thinking about putting additional money into the market at this time, I would suggest taking a walk around the block and wait until we get some sort of a pullback that works off short-term excesses.
If the market rises too much, Goldman says, that could put a damper on the deals that have been driving stocks higher. He says the mergers and acquisitions frenzy will die down if prices get too high. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
As enthusiastic as the markets were today, imagine what things might have been like without the specter of a Fed meeting on the calendar. Bernanke and company meet Wednesday on interest rates. Shares of Hewlett-Packard didn't move much today, even as one of the most controversial episodes in that company's history resurfaced. Three reporters for CNET are planning to sue HP. It's the latest twist in the corporate spying scandal that cost Patricia Dunn her job as chairman of the board. Marketplace's Steve Henn reports.
It began when Patricia Dunn tried to plug a corporate leak. Acting in concert with HP attorneys, Dunn hired private investigators who obtained and sifted through the phone records of more than a half a dozen journalists. When word of the investigation broke, it created a firestorm. And today, Kevin Boyle, an attorney for three of the reporters whose phone records were searched, announced they were planning to sue.
The thrust of the suit will be invasion of privacy.
Many media watchers can't recall another case quite like it.
This is a very unusual suit, and that is because, hopefully, this is very unusual conduct by Hewlett-Packard.
Four other reporters from Business Week and the New York Times have been negotiating with HP trying to reach a settlement. Tom Rosensteel, the director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism, says this is a change for journalists who traditionally prefer to let their work speak for itself.
I think that you're seeing news organizations saying we need to take a new tack.
But Rosensteel does see a bit of an irony here. For years, companies have used similar invasion of privacy lawsuits as a tool to fight back against aggressive reporters. Two reporters from the Wall Street Journal have decided not to sue. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Healthcare costs are high. We all know that. But it seems they've gotten to a point where more businesses are ready to do something. Today, a group of Fortune 500 CEOs announced their support for healthcare reform, as Janet Babin reports from North Carolina Public Radio.
Safeway CEO Steve Bird created the Business Coalition. One reason why? Money. He says that by next year, the average Fortune 500 company will face employee healthcare bills that exceed its net income. On a webcast at Safeway Online, Bird explained why company healthcare costs are rising.
As more people become uninsured, those of us that insure our employee base, we pay more for insurance.
The newly formed Coalition to Advance Healthcare Reform draws members from almost three dozen Fortune 500 companies, like General Mills, Pepsi, and Aetna. The coalition mission, mandatory market-based health insurance with no exclusions for pre-existing conditions, financial assistance for low-income people, and incentives that would promote healthy lifestyles. But while Bird and his coalition try to reinvent healthcare, many of his own company's hourly employees have to wait months before they can get coverage. That's the result of a union contract tussle a few years ago. Rick Wertzman is a senior fellow at the New America Foundation, a public policy think tank.
It's a little disingenuous on his part to be calling for universal coverage on the one hand, and then on the other hand to have his employees wait 18 months and their families 30 months to get health coverage.
Still, Wertzman says Bird and the coalition are at least trying to find a way to extend coverage to thousands of uninsured workers. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Even as the Dow goes up, oil prices come down. Crude fell another 46 cents today to $61.50 a barrel. Still, the Secretary of Energy said today we're looking at a summer of record pump prices. On Wall Street today, two out of three ain't bad. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Say what you will about Americans, we do love our revolving debt. The Federal Reserve reported on March consumer credit today. That's a fancy way of saying the balance outstanding on our collective credit cards. It rose almost 10% last month to just under $900 billion. You know what your contribution to that total was. Commentator Shira Boss wonders whether life might be better if you knew what was going on with everyone else, too.
Money is known as the last taboo. We're more likely to know about our friends taking antidepressants than to know about their dreaded credit card balances. Why is this? Well, as my eighth grade teacher used to say about a lot of things, it's rude, crude, and socially unacceptable. But since we seem to have lost our manners in many other areas, why be so proper when it comes to personal finances? I think it comes down to fear. If we ask, we might have to tell. We might have to admit that we're in financial trouble. We're also afraid of not fitting in. Who wants to be the one who speaks up at a group dinner and says, "I'd rather not order wine, actually"? Why does it seem like everyone else can always afford it? The fact is, anxiety over money is much more common than we realize. More Americans are going bankrupt than are getting divorced. But bankrupt families can't find one another and talk it out because we're too ashamed to admit money trouble. So why not break the money taboo? It's only adding to our stress. Let's speak up about our envy, be honest about what we can't afford, and wonder out loud how our neighbors paid for that weekend trip to Paris. I like to put it as, "Wow, how long did you have to save up for that?" Open the door a bit and see what you find out, even if it's just a look on their faces that tells you they hadn't saved. You're likely to learn that you're not alone. After all, 70% of us report living paycheck to paycheck. At least you'll discover the relief of honesty and often get a reality check. That's a way we can improve our financial well-being even before we make more money or pay off all our debts.
Shira Boss is the author of the book Green with Envy. Tell us if you are, or if you're not, just tell us something. Go to marketplace.org and click on contact. Over the weekend, Berkshire Hathaway stockholders told activist investors to take a hike. They crushed a proposal calling for Warren Buffett's holding company to sell off its shares in PetroChina. Berkshire is the biggest foreign investor in PetroChina, which is accused of supporting the genocide in Darfur by doing business in Sudan. It's all an issue that comes under the broad heading of socially responsible investing. And that flies in the face of a more traditional view of capitalism, that companies exist to make money for shareholders, period. Alex Goldmark reports now on one group trying to change that definition.
When Jay Cohen Gilbert and his partners started a basketball clothing company, they wanted to make sure they were good to their investors. But they also wanted to be good to their community, their employees, and the environment.
But certainly as our business grew, as we had new investors coming in, and particularly when business got tough, it became a lot harder to justify to your CFO, you know, to your board, or even to your staff, why you're doing your third-party audits of your factories and why you're still giving away 5% of your profits to charity.
Third-party audits cost extra money, but ensure workers aren't exploited. Charity can cost extra too. And so it can be tough to stick to your values when times get rough in traditional corporations.
Traditional corporations, whether they're C-corps or S-corps, LLCs, whatever, are all governed by one single rule, which is that they have to maximize the return to shareholders, even if it's to the exclusion or detriment of other stakeholders, you know, employees, community, environment.
Now that Gilbert has sold his traditional corporation, he's working with his old partners and over 100 other entrepreneurs to develop a new standard for companies they're calling a B corporation. The B is for social benefit. It's still a traditional company, but with a modified charter that legally binds it to a socially conscious set of values.
I call it a one-word revolution.
That's Leslie Christian, co-founder of Upstream 21, an Oregon holding company focused on building small businesses that strengthen the local economy. The tweak that she made to traditional articles of incorporation is being used as a model for B corporations.
There's a provision that says the company may consider the interests of the community and of the employees and the effect on the local economy. We simply changed that requirement from may to shall. It's not enough to say you can consider these interests, you must consider them.
That's in addition to shareholders, not instead of. So when it's time to sell, the highest bidder isn't guaranteed to win. Non-monetary factors will count too. But that's not a popular idea with shareholder rights advocate Nell Minow of the Corporate Library.
Is it really right for the companies to say, I care more about the butterflies, so I'm going to put my money on that instead of returning the money to the shareholders who have trusted us?
She says social responsibility is fine, but corporations function best when they're accountable to one and only one group, shareholders. She fears anything else could let the managers abuse their power by claiming to act in the interests of something abstract, like those butterflies, instead of the quantifiable dollar. That criticism misses the point, says Jay Cohen Gilbert.
It's pretty simple. You change the rules, you change behavior. You change behavior, you change outcomes. If the rules of the game are maximize returns to shareholders, then by definition, other stakeholders are going to suffer.
And it's those other stakeholders, like your employees or the environment, that need more looking after right now, not just shareholders, he says. We'll see which companies get the title B Corporation next month when Gilbert's nonprofit, B Lab, announces its first certified list. In New York, I'm Alex Goldmark for Marketplace.
Coming up, mixing business and humanitarianism in Cambodia.
We look at a product, we design it using local materials, local staff, local skills as well.
But first, let's do the numbers. The Shop Till You Drop M&A frenzy pushed the Dow higher today, with giants like Alcoa helping the blue chip index toward an 80-year record for the longest streak of gains. The Dow rose 48 points, up a third of 1% to close at 13,312. Yahoo took a dip, keeping the lid on the NASDAQ, which edged down a point, basically flat at 2570. The S&P 500 rose 3 points, a quarter percent, to finish at 1509. Besides Alcoa, there was more money coming in from the sidelines. BAE Systems made a $4.1 billion play for Armor Holdings. It makes armor for U.S. troops, and that sent the target company stock up by 5%. Investor Warren Buffett, the head of Berkshire Hathaway, as I mentioned, the insurance and investment company, he also kept traders on their toes after he announced he would like to buy a huge business. And here's the kicker. He's got $40 billion burning a hole in his pocket. Bond prices rose, and that sent the yield on the benchmark 10-year Treasury note to 4.63%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments. Today, Putnam manages money for more than 9 million individual and institutional investors worldwide. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Ever hear a song on Marketplace, but you just can't place it? Or maybe it's the first time you've heard it and you want to hear it again. Just click on the archive section of our website. We list the songs we play on every show in that day's rundown. There's even a link to the Public Radio Music Source, where you can buy the song and help fund public radio programming. It's all at marketplace.org.
Here's a look at the Marketplace Statebook for events coming up Tuesday. Secretary of State Rice and President Bush attend a dinner at the British Embassy hosted by Queen Elizabeth II. A Senate subcommittee on energy and water development receives testimony on the policies and funding necessary for reducing U.S. oil dependence. And law enforcement officials from over 80 countries gather in Madrid for the annual International Drug Enforcement Conference. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every bad spider pun you can imagine has been put to good use today, so I am not going to add to that list as I describe how Spider-Man 3 did at the box office this weekend. $151 million in the U.S. alone. Today's other Hollywood story has nothing to do with Tobey Maguire or guys climbing buildings and overhyped comic book takeoffs. Here's Marketplace's Lisa Napoli.
The Los Angeles Times reported today on a unique proposal that's being floated around Hollywood. Five Mexican directors shopping themselves in a five-picture, all-or-nothing deal that could fetch $100 million. Stu Levine of Variety says for the studio that bites, it's a good investment and has international appeal.
They could be the next Spielbergs and the next, you know, Martin Scorsese's. Yeah, it could be huge. I mean, look at the Latin influx in the United States and how, you know, Spanish television does so well.
Levine says the idea of asking a studio to bankroll a typically indie directorial quintet is unprecedented, especially since part of the deal is that two of the movies get made in Spanish. Mark Young teaches the business of Hollywood at the University of Southern California. He says having the films Babel, Pan's Labyrinth, and Children of Men under their belts gives the cabal clout.
If they hadn't had that string of well-known and successful movies, such a deal, you know, might not be quite as tenable.
The five-pack is asking for creative control over what they make, and Hollywood watcher Nikki Fink says that notion goes against the trend right now to take back power from the talent.
You don't necessarily want these directors making Pretty Woman. You would like them making a Pretty Woman aimed at the Latino market.
But, she says, in Hollywood, the ultimate driver besides money is the fear of losing out to the competition. So she says the Mexican quintet is likely to ink a deal. In Los Angeles, I'm Lisa Napoli for Marketplace.
Sometimes the best way to get a handle on an immensely complicated issue is to take it one day at a time. In this case, quite literally, with the immensely complicated topic of the global economy. Economist Daniel Altman tackles June 15th, 2005 in his latest book, Connected. He's trying to tease out the threads that make globalization work, or not work, as the case may be. Daniel Altman, welcome to the program.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Let's pick the first event. You start each chapter with a matching set of clocks, and the clocks up at the top of the first chapter are New York at midnight, 12:03 a.m. as a matter of fact, and then Stockholm at 6:03 in the morning, June the 15th. What happened?
Well, that's when the story came down the wire that Ericsson and Napster were going to start this online mobile phone music venture.
And why is that important? I mean, why does that matter in the global economy?
Well, what it shows is how companies are working together in the 21st century. You have two companies which sit nine time zones away from each other in Los Angeles and Stockholm. And they're incredibly different. Napster is this sort of company that started out as an almost fly-by-night illegal music-sharing business. Ericsson is one of the oldest telecoms companies in the world, but they found something that they could really do in common, which was use the Napster brand to sell music on the Ericsson phones.
10 or 15 years ago, the word globalization wasn't really in the vernacular so much. What's it going to be in 10 or 15 years? When we say globalization, what are we going to mean?
I think it's almost going to be a trite word at that point because it will be so much a part of our life, not just economically, but culturally and socially as well. It'll just be reality. And so we'll probably stop using the word and we'll have a bunch of other words for the more specific phenomena that exist within it.
Is it a zero-sum game, the global economy? I mean, is there a necessarily a winner and a loser, or a couple of winners and a couple of losers?
It's definitely not a zero-sum game. You have gains from trade. The gains to the winners outweigh the losses to the losers. That's just an axiomatic thing. The question is, how do you spread those gains around so that everybody's better off? It's not always something that government can do. It's certainly not something that government always has the inclination to do. So we have to look out for ourselves a little bit more.
That's a pretty tall order for a worker in Iowa or Detroit who's been either outsourced or laid off because his company's not making enough money because of globalization.
I think that's true. But a lot of the time, all you have to do is pick up the newspaper and read it with a certain kind of eye. Let's say you're reading about rebels fighting in the Niger Delta in Nigeria. Well, why would that affect you directly? It does affect you directly because it affects oil prices. Oil prices are affecting the cost of your commute, the cost of everything you buy that's made with plastics, which come from oil, and the cost of your heating oil if you have to heat your house. These things all are coming from events, diverse events all around the world. And I think the more you take note of them, the more you can sort of see what's in your economic future.
I could flip to the end and figure out what the last story of the day was, but why don't you tell us, how did you end June the 15th, 2005?
Well, the last bit is actually an epilogue, which has Sharon Stark, who works for a financial firm, flying home after a long day meeting with salespeople all over the country selling the investment products of her firm. And the idea of the epilogue is to emphasize how important face-to-face, person-to-person contact still is, even in a world where we use so much electronic communications to do our work.
The book by Daniel Altman is called Connected, 24 Hours in the Global Economy. Mr. Altman, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
A new exhibit opened Friday at the National Design Museum in New York. It's not quite cutting-edge stuff. It's about design with a social conscience, aimed at encouraging rural entrepreneurs in the third world, doing well and doing good at the same time, you might say. The basic idea is already happening in Cambodia with a company called Development Technology Workshop, or DTW. Rachel Louise Snyder caught up with the man who runs it in Phnom Penh.
This is just a really simple, collapsible walking cane. That is obviously just a golf grip. You know, this is just aluminium. This is just elastic running through the middle of it and a forged end.
Richard Pullen is describing a walking cane for the blind. It's one of two dozen products DTW has redesigned from the industrialized world to fit the developing world. This year, they'll turn over $2.5 million. Call it engineering meets altruism and commerce.
Now, we sell these out of Cambodia for $11.
They'd sell for $45 in the U.S. 200 on the table in front of us in pink flowered cloth bags are headed for Tibet. Thousands more have gone to Africa. So how do they do it?
So, I mean, you know, we look at a product, we design it using local materials,
local staff, local skills as well. So it's pointless giving village, you know, communities really high-tech bits of kit and they can't get parts.
Take the touch typer Braille Writer, which Pullen says sells in America for about $900. His version doesn't require electricity, and it's made of metal, so if you drop it, it's the floor that breaks.
This is our version, which looks a little bit crude. It's like a small version of an old-fashioned manual typewriter. But this is actually selling now around the world for only $150.
Some ideas come from everyday observations, and the solutions are simple. How does a man without arms brush his teeth? A toothbrush tied to a pole. Others, like how does a landmine victim in the countryside collect water, are more challenging for Pullen. And we haven't even gotten to the Tempest.
Basically obliterates anything in its path.
Pullen compares the Yellow Tempest to an angry 3.5-ton lawnmower.
What it actually does, it's a remote-controlled machine that actually goes into the minefield.
And chains and cutters on the front spin at 1,300 RPMs and clear all the vegetation ahead of the deminers.
They work in probably the most harshest environment. You know, they're getting blown up, they've got vegetation, they get mistreated by the users. So, you know, it's a pretty shocking life for the machine, to be honest.
So far, Tempests have gone to Mozambique, Congo, Laos, Senegal, and a bunch of other countries. They sell for $120,000. The next closest thing on the market is $500,000.
We're not specialists in demining or in road equipment or blind equipment, and that works in our favor because we don't come with the preconceptions. And we just base it back to basics. What can we buy? What's used locally here? What's the skill levels available? And that's what we come up with.
Ideally, he says, their creations will become small private businesses run by Cambodians. It's happened already. A whiteboard in his office lists the projects in the works and a dozen more in the dream phase. Then there are a few closer to home. His new daughter, for example. Well, let's just say her stroller has the best suspension you've probably ever seen. And she definitely has some racing stripes in her future.
It was fine beforehand, but I just thought it needed to be upgraded a little bit.
In Phnom Penh, Cambodia, I'm Rachel Louise Snyder for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, where a mix of large U.S. companies can strengthen your portfolio. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note for you today. Fans of the ABC series Lost are dying to know how it'll end. That, they're going to have to wait for, but at least now they know when it's going to end. 2010 is the answer. Facing a decline in ratings, ABC's borrowing a page from HBO and Showtime and turning Lost into what it's calling a limited series. ABC is going to air 16 episodes of the plane crash mystery over each of the next three seasons instead of the usual 22. The network's hoping to stop a slide in viewership down to 12 million an episode this year from about 20 when it first started. And that's Marketplace from American Public Media. The Dow Industrials kept on going today. No slide there. Up 48 points, about a third of 1%. The new record, if you're the type that keeps track of things like that, is 13,312. The NASDAQ fell a point to close pretty much where it started. The S&P 500 gained 3 points, about a quarter percent. Our producers include Jane Lindholm, Brett Neely, and Fiona Ng. Marketplace was created by Jim Russell. Next time on the program, accounting tricks on the campaign trail.
You don't want to be in the left behind pack, and therefore you try to make your numbers look as good as possible. You want to show that you've raised as much as possible, and you want to show that your cash on hand is as big as possible.
What could possibly go wrong? I'm Kai Rizdahl. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.